Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz, episode 106 for January 29th, 2010. CF Engine. It's time for Floss Weekly, the weekly show for free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz. Now, normally at this point, you'd be hearing Leo Laporte's dulcet tones, the wonderful speaking voice you hear at the beginning of every show, but he's taking this week off from recording Floss Weekly because he was busy all day on the day we normally tape this with that little, you might have heard of it, that little new thing, the Newton 2, whatever that thing was that Apple just released, Newton 2, Newton 3, something like that. No, the iPad. That's what it was, the iPad. Anyway, he was busy with that all day when we normally tape this show, so I'm on my own this week, but I have a really, really wonderful guest for this show. It's also a guest that needed to have a taping pretty early in the morning because he's all the way over in somewhere in Europe. I think it's Norway, so we'll have to check in with him when we do that. But we have with us none other than the infamous, famous, all that above, Mark Burgess. Mark Burgess' claim to fame is that he wrote CF Engine. CF Engine is a configuration management system. Now, we've already chatted with other people that in this space, like Puppet, I think we did 3 or 3 months ago, where we talked about having tools that help you make sure your system is up and running, configured properly, especially handy when you have dozens or hundreds or thousands of machines that need to be correct and designed. So CF Engine is sort of the granddaddy of all those because it goes all the way back, I think, to 1993. I mean, that's back when I was handwriting Perl scripts and stuff to do this sort of thing by hand. And boy, if I'd only known about CF Engine back then. I think I did. I think I heard of it, but I just didn't end up using it for some reason. But lots of history with CF Engine. We'll get into all that in just a moment. But first, we have to bring on our guest. So I have here on Skype, all the way, I believe, from somewhere in Norway. Are you in Oslo? Where are you at, Mark?
I'm in Oslo, in Norway. Yep, snowy Oslo.
Snowy, okay. It's the middle of the day for you. It's very early in the morning for me. So actually, it's more towards the evening for you, right?
Yeah, it's 5 o'clock, 5 p.m.
Oh, that's good. Well, thank you for agreeing.
It's just turning dark because we have very little daylight in the winter, so... it's getting dark right about now.
About 4 hours of daylight? Is that all you get?
At its worst, we get about 4 hours of daylight. That's correct.
Oh, I can't imagine living in a place like that. You know,
it's been such a beautiful day. We get the 3 hours of sunshine. We get a quality sunshine.
Wow, that's really cool. So tell us a little about, I sort of tried to explain what CF Engine was in the opening, but if you could tell me, in your words, give us the 30,000-foot view. What is CF Engine?
So CF Engine is about configuration management. I got the name CF from SendMail all those years ago, the SendMail.cf file, configuration mm-hmm. file. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at a way to automate the management of systems and needed a name, I guess, to talk about this. And I was put in charge of a bunch of Sun workstations way back in 1993. Mm. I moved to Oslo for the first time. And I realized that there were really no tools during those days to manage systems automatically. People were using RDIST and they were pushing out images and pretty much what they're doing now, I guess. But there was really no way to automate system administration. So I looked at the problem, and what we were doing at the time was basically a bunch of shell scripts and Perl scripts on different platforms. And of course, all the platforms are different, so the scripts needed to be different on each platform. And we really just needed a way to have a single language, a single way of talking about the configuration on a system that was independent of the platform. And the idea of CF Engine was originally just to create a platform-independent way of talking about the configuration on a system.
Yeah, I was just going to say, in that time period is a couple of years after I came out with the first Programming Perl book, so I imagine some of the things you're doing were in Perl.
That's right. In fact, in Oslo here, I went to the university in Oslo to study, actually as a postdoc, and the guys in Oslo are pretty jammed up. They're pretty up to date, very good Unix administrators at the University of Oslo, and they were already using all of the latest tools, and they had a lot of Perl scripts. But there was also a lot of shell scripting things, mm-hmm. that, you know, legacy stuff that had been passed down through the years, and tons of different scripts, you know, special scripts for Solaris, for BSD, for some 3 point whatever it was in those days, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember writing a tool we had at the time that I wrote Programming Perl. I was actually working at Intel, and we had about 20 Sun 3s and a half dozen Sun 4s and a couple of Sun 386s and a couple of Microvaxes. And the problem was, how do you do something to all the machines? So I wrote this cool little tool that actually ended up in one of the archives at some point, where you would say, do this across all the machines that are Sun 3s, or do this across all the machines that are Sun 4s. And that's how I did my administration for quite a while. So I can definitely remember the problem. And so this was the problem space that led you to create CFEngine then.
That's right. And you know, if you remember back to that time, there were many more platforms in play than there are today. Linux has leveled the playing field quite considerably. Mm-hmm. Everything is much easier today than it was back then. All of the different groups had different operating systems. So we had some guys in the physics department. They were running on AIX. We had HPUX. We had BSD. We had Sun. We had, you know, Solaris came out shortly after this time as well. Mm-hmm. There was pretty much everything in play. And the other thing about the university environment, of course, is that everybody's special. Everybody in the university is special. They have special needs, with a capital S and a capital N. And everybody needs to be able to opt out of some centralized management scheme. Mm-hmm. And what the guys at the university found was they would put so much heart and soul and effort into writing these scripts to look after people's machines. And then all of these people in the different departments, they would unplug these scripts and do their own thing and run wild on the systems. Mm. So when I was writing CFEngine, I realized that it had to be based on the idea that people could override centralized decisions, because people do occasionally have special needs, and that's the way, you know, you allow diversity to live and exist in a controlled way. Create good automation that allows people to specify their special needs, and then integrate it rather than pushing out a single vision in a sort of totalitarian view, which I guess was, you know, what ARDIST was, because it was a very simple tool.
Yeah.
But that's the way people were using it in that time.
So so how did that lead then to CFEngine?
So CFEngine was my answer to that, and I was working with another guy at the University of Oslo. And we looked at all of these scripts and sort of threw our hands up in the air and said, we need something simpler. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a single language where we could just describe what the outcome should be? Mm-hmm. Never mind all the procedures, all of these scripting details, all the if, then, else. Because you couldn't understand these scripts. You know, there were 90% if this, then that, or do this, or whatever.
Right.
And 10% was the actual details that you were interested in, the intention.
Right. I mean, so you're basically looking for, I want Perl installed on this machine, and it should have these modules there, and I want the et cetera RC file to automatically start up Apache on this machine. You really want outcomes described.
Exactly. So that was the idea, and I guess I've understood it better over the years. Back in 1993, I was flying by the seat of my pants, and a lot of it was intuitive. Mm-hmm. But over the years, I've developed even the theory behind it. This has become part of my research, and I actually have a pretty strong model that describes this. Now we talk about promises. You know, what are the promises that you want to be kept on your system? What is the intention?
Yeah, I definitely want to get into that a little later. I want to cover the history first. So did you sit down and just start writing version one, or how did that come about?
I did. We tried to break it down into, you know, my background is in physics. Uh-huh. So my natural my natural tendency is to break things down into the simplest atoms. And the simplest atoms seem to be things like files, processes, jobs to be scheduled, symbolic links to be created, stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And I came up with a very simple description language, which actually later Richard Stallman pointed out was somewhat like Make. Hmm. So, you know, Make is also, of course, a tool where you describe the outcome that you want to be created and some relationships between bits and pieces, and it creates that outcome for you. In a similar way, CF Engine tries to create this outcome. The place where it's different, and the thing that I realized very early on, is that outcomes don't always come out the way that you want them to, because other things get in the way. Things can get in the way of carrying out a specific recipe. Mm-hmm. So you have to correct the system all the time. It has to become self-repairing. And also little fingers get into the system behind your back, and they make changes which aren't part of your scheme of automation, and you've got to make sure that your outcome is continuously maintained.
So as an example, that just so I can understand this, that would be, for example, you have a desire to have Apache running on a machine. There's actually multiple pieces to that. There's having it in the startup scripts for the system so that when it reboots, it's actually running. But you also have to make sure that the document directory is there and the configuration file is there. Is that sort of what you're alluding to there?
Exactly right. I mean, there are lots of different pieces. There's also the chance that Apache daemon will actually crash at some point, right?
Mm, yeah.
Could be, or somebody might stop it, or something else might interfere. And so we need to be constantly monitoring that state to make sure that it's good. That could also apply even to the configuration files that configured Apache. Mm-hmm. Somebody might have gone in and taken out a crucial line that says, you know, how many, you know, the maximum number of clients that's running, set this to some absurd number, and the service no longer works. So all kinds of things can happen behind your back, and we were definitely seeing this in our university environment. Little fingers would be changing things all the time.
So what's the solution? How does CF Engine actually manage that then?
So I liken it to, you know, painting a fence. Say you decide you want to paint your fence white, and this becomes your policy. So you want to have a nice white fence. The outcome is a white fence. You paint your fence white once. Everyone knows how to do it. But as time goes on, you know, the traffic goes past, birds anoint your nice white fence. It doesn't stay white for very long. So you have to go back and check. You have to check often that it remains white until you change your mind and you want a green fence, and that's a new release, if you like, of this configuration. Mm-hmm. In the same way, you know, CF Engine users will decide, I want this web server to be configured like this. I want these users to be on the system. And things can change. You may have software updates taking place, things changing behind the scenes. CF Engine then has to run continuously in the background according to some schedule, which you decide for yourself, and check continuously, is the state of the system now the state that you intended, the state that you have described in your configuration language?
Okay.
And so I introduced this term convergence, which is the idea that the system never gets worse. So you can run CF Engine as many times as you like, and it will always only bring you back to this desired outcome. Whereas, you know, you compare it to the scripts that we were running back in 1993, and you would run the script once, and everything would be great, assuming that you started from, you know, a blank machine or something. Mm-hmm. You ran the script again, and it didn't work, or it actually broke something.
Right, like something that would add a line to a startup file would then add it the second time.
Exactly. So CF Engine was designed right from the beginning to be convergent, in the sense if you run it once, it's the same as running it many times. And it should check to see that the state of the system is correct. If it's not correct, it repairs it. If it is correct, it leaves it alone.
So this is similar to the process, then, and I like that you brought this example up earlier. This is similar to a make file, where once I've already made my binary from my sources, the system knows that the binary is valid given the sources that are there and doesn't have to keep remaking it.
Right, exactly. Hmm. Make, of course, uses timestamps to do this, but you could use all kinds of criteria, all different kinds of ways of measuring the system. You might use timestamps, file hashes. You might examine the process table. You might look at logs to see if jobs have been executed and see if anyone uses all of these different kinds of strategies actually to keep track of what has gone on the system recently and the current state. So it has little probes. If you like, it's like adding a sensor to every single operation that you make. First, see what's there, and then if you don't like what you see, you fix it.
So a CF engine description for a system then consists of all of these little recipes to evaluate the current state, and if it's wrong, do something to fix it. Is that a good way to summarize then what you're writing in the CF engine configuration files?
I say that's pretty good.
Okay. Now, you said there's a whole lot of different probes you can use, like file times, hash things. Can I create my own probes and just say this is the command I want to run, and if the exit status is non-zero, then something's broken?
You can, and in fact, that's the way that CF Engine has expanded from the basic atoms. You know, there are just these basic atoms, files, processes, commands to run. These are the operations. Those are fairly straightforward, but the ways to examine the system, those are quite diverse. So the things that we've added are probes to, you know, read value from database, examine file. Does file contain this pattern? Mm-hmm. You know, is there something matching this regular expression in this part of a file? So giving, if you like, almost very, very specific coordinates in your system, looking to see what kind of pattern exists there. Does it match my expectations? Is it fulfilling my promises? And then how do I repair it from that?
Now, as I understand it, though, the CF engine configuration files are not executables per se. They're a description of the system, except for, of course, the commands that have to be specifically run to probe or to heal. So this is in contrast with, say, I think it's, is it Chef, where you're actually running Ruby code in order to figure out what's next, something like that?
So there are these other configuration management tools like Chef and Puppet and so on that are based on Ruby. CF Engine is written in C, so it's pretty low level. Mm-hmm. And it's an interpreted language in the sense that the description that you create is read into an agent, which then creates a model of your system based on that. And this agent then examines your system, makes all these measurements, and compares it to the state that, as it understands it from your description. Chef, I'm not very familiar with. Puppet was very much inspired by CF Engine, so it does somewhat similar things. I think the main difference between them is that they run on a Ruby platform, whereas CF Engine is written directly in C.
And also, they're a little newer. I mean, this goes back to 93, you said, right?
Well, of course, CF Engine is brand new. We had a release for major version 3 was released in January last year. It's newer than all of them.
With CF Engine 3, you begin to bring in this thing called promise theory. How does that influence the way that CF Engine runs?
Right. So I actually went back to the drawing board, because CF Engine began in 1993, when we didn't really know anything, and a lot of the research that's taken place over 10 years, trying and failing, see what worked, what didn't work. And of course, a lot of junk gets put into software over 10 years' time when you're trying out different things. And so after 10 years, I realized that it was sort of getting out of control, and we had to bring it back, sort of take out the core that was good and put it into a better framework, because the code just wasn't going to survive the next iteration.
Mm-hmm.
So I look back at it, and because I'm a theorist by nature, I wanted a way to understand what it was we'd learned over the last 10 years. So I tried to come up with a model. And none of the models of system administration or computer management really applied to CF Engine, because what CF Engine is about is autonomous distributed agents working independently but cooperating in a distributed system. So I came up with this theory, model, call it what you like, which eventually became called promise theory. That wasn't my doing. And the idea was that each thing that you express in CF Engine is actually a promise. And the agent's job is to keep this promise on a continuous basis. Mm-hmm. So each time it wakes up, it looks at these promises you've made and it says, are these promises kept? Yes, Apache is running, promise kept. No, there's not a line in etc password containing the name of this user. I'd better add it. Mm-hmm. So now the promise is kept. And this also takes care of this idea of convergence, which is that the system always gets towards this ideal outcome, which is the promise that you made. So this model that I came up with for promises seemed like a nice idea, and I started to develop it over a period of 3, 4, 5 years, and managed to get to the point where I could express everything in CF Engine as a promise. And the advantage of that was that, you know, you, of course, it could seem silly at some point, but the advantage of doing that is, in fact, that everything you express ends up having one single, straightforward, simple syntax. And that means you just learn one pattern, and then you know everything. And to me, that was a huge value add to the language. Whereas in CF Engine 2 and previously, as it had grown organically and kind of the syntax had kind of got out of control, I thought things I thought were a good idea originally, like, oh, yes, we'll take that bit of shell syntax and use that because people know that. That turned out to be a really bad idea because the whole thing just became a mess. But going back to the beginning and having a simple, clear model, principles, I love that. That's my, you know, from, you know, I was the kid at school who would, who could never remember anything, refused to remember anything because I would just remember first principles and derive all the answers from that. So that's my take on things. So always go back to the first principles and see if there's some simple core that you can derive everything from. And that was promise theory.
So the notion is, let's see if I can follow this. The notion is that a promise is I have a given outcome that I need to have the system to be, and I have certain tools at my disposal to be able to get it there. And I also have certain prerequisites that also have to be in play before I can start. So this is essentially what you're now describing everything in CF Engine with, the sort of everything that this depends on, everything that this results in, and the sort of the, so basically describing the nodes and the edges, right, of a graph?
Yeah, exactly. But all the way through the graph, in fact. And this is the nice thing about having, because, so this is, in fact, the other part about promise theory, which I didn't mention, which is that when you create a model of autonomous agents keeping promises, this is something like atomic theory in, you know, in physics or something. It's, these are the basic building blocks of any kind of system. Even if you don't believe in autonomy, even if you want to be completely dictatorial and manage all of your systems from a single totalitarian, you know, node on the network, you can always describe that situation from the point of view of a bunch of autonomous agents promising to follow the orders of that single totalitarian agent. So it's not so much the fact that I believe that this is, you know, that everybody should have complete autonomy. It's more a case of this is an extremely pragmatic way of looking at the configuration of systems, because you can always build up any kind of graph, any kind of system or network from that point of view.
You could probably also quickly determine that if you have some promises that have prerequisites that aren't delivered by anything else in the system, that you won't have a complete system and you can't bring it to convergence.
That's exactly true. And you know, it gives you a kind of system of checks and balances as well. If, you know, just because you promise a service to somebody else doesn't mean that they promise to use it. And that what that boils down to in configuration terms is, let's say you've granted access to a service. Mm-hmm. Maybe nobody is collecting that result. Or conversely, somebody is trying to collect a result and you haven't granted access to that service. Mm. So there's always a plus and a minus to make a binding. You require two promises. It's kind of a trade.
Hmm. Interesting.
It's something like the service-oriented architecture. You know, the service-oriented architecture came up just about the same time as I was working on promise theory, I suppose, and came up with many of the same ideas, but of course that was all tied to the web, whereas promise theory is somewhat general and not necessarily related to the web. But what this gives us is, in fact, an incredibly simple algebra for finding errors and inconsistencies in configurations on a distributed basis. Mm. The way people have done this in the past in academia is to do exactly the opposite of promises. It's to do obligations. This goes to what's usually called deontic logic, the logic of obligations, upon which all law and rule-based systems are pretty much based on. Mm-hmm. There you try to oblige systems. You know, it's more of an authoritative point of view, where you say, you must comply with this regulation. You must have these file permissions. Apache must be running on your system. But of course, my first comment to that was, you can jump up and down and stamp your feet, but you can't force that thing to be running. You can't force that machine to set those file permissions if it doesn't want to. Mm-hmm. Because you may not have root access, or you may not be the administrator of that machine. The best you can hope for is, in fact, for them to cooperate voluntarily, mm-hmm. to sign up to this promise, to make the promise that will be true. So the promise also encapsulates this idea of uncertainty, which you always have in any system. The other problem with obligations is that in a distributed system, obligations are death, because you could have two different sources, let's say servers or agents or whatever, demanding different things of you. So the example I usually give is, child of British and American parents, daddy says you must say tomato, mummy says you must say tomato. Mm-hmm. And the poor child can do nothing to resolve this conflict. But if you turn it the other way around and say that you ask the child to promise to say tomato or tomato, in fact, both promises can coexist. You can promise to say tomato to dad and tomato to mum. Hmm. There is no problem. If you promise to say tomato and tomato to mum, you realize it. You see immediately that that's a conflict, because the information is localized in the child in one place. It's not distributed around the network. So when you turn things upside down and view them in terms of promises, all of these distributed information problems collapse into localizable, easily resolvable problems of straightforward logic.
Wow, cool. That does sound like the right way to do it. It sounds like it's obvious, but anything that's brilliant is obvious once you see it, so this is good.
It's not right.
The hard part's getting there, yeah. Once you see how a parser works, it's like, oh, duh, of course the parser's going to work that way. But it's like, now how do I do this? Right. Pretty incredible. So let's go back to the practical side of this now. So you've got CF Engine 3. Let's say I'm new to it, so I've now just installed it. In fact, actually, I have a free BSD box that I'm configuring, and it's part of the ports. It's got CF Engine 3, I think 301 or something like that, but it's fairly recent. And I installed it. Okay, so now I have a daemon running, and I have some configuration files I have to edit. What's the best way for me to kind of get into this? What's my next step?
My next step will be to go to the website, cfengine.org, mm-hmm. and probably I would go and look at the solutions manual, which is a list of recipes, if you like, of simple things that you need, that a system admin needs to do, mm-hmm. like add a user to a password file, set the value of a variable in the config file, maybe start a service, mm-hmm. And things like this. So these can be abstracted to at a fairly high level, mm-hmm. and then as you look at these sort of patterns, you try to learn the basic pattern of the promises. I said there's a single syntax. There's also, of course, a plethora of possible configuration options and settings and things that you could say about a configuration. So the
this is a really rich language, so it would take me some time to learn it then. But what you're saying is there are some cookbook examples that I could get started with. For example, I want to have a script, or I want to have a configuration promise that says I always have Apache running on my systems and have it check it every 30 minutes or something. So there's already a recipe somewhere that I could just cut and paste into a file that would probably be close, and I might need to tweak the port number or something, right?
Exactly. So the solutions manual is the place to go look first. Mm-hmm. And then if you've got I'm not sure what's in the port on FreeBSD, but if it contains all of the stuff from the source, the tarball, mm-hmm. then there's a directory of test units, which has like one simple, runnable, isolatable test for each feature in the language. Mm-hmm. And that really gives you one complete running example of each feature, if you like. That's also a great place to look for. You know, grep is your tool, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right.
I mean, it's still my favorite tool.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm inside GNU Emacs most of the time using the rgrep function of that, which is really nice to go down through a hierarchy looking for patterns and then pulling those out into that. And I was going to ask you, because I always ask all the developers this, VI or Emacs?
I'm an Emacs guy.
All right, cool. There we go. All right. Yep. Another chalkboard entry for the Emacs side. Yay. So I can get started fairly simply. Now, out of the box, is CF Engine going to try to change anything on my box? I mean, if I rebooted right now, would it start tweaking things? Or is it the as distributed, is it neutral? Is it just not doing anything at all?
Yeah, it doesn't do anything out of the box.
It
just sits there ticking over. If it's the basic configuration that we put in the system is supposed to just make CF Engine start running in the background, doing absolutely zilch, nothing.
Okay. Not, it doesn't add your user ID to the password file so you can log in. It doesn't like do that automatically.
You know, because I have better things to do.
Yeah, exactly. Although that would be cool, because this is running as root, right? So it's got all the powers of any administration. So suppose I set up this little thing that says, okay, make sure Apache is running every, you know, by checking every 10 minutes or every 30 minutes or something like that, whatever my cron job timing is as well. Actually, this is running constantly in the background, right? It's not really coming from cron. It's just running, right?
So there are different ways of setting it up. So there are many different components. The dangerous part, if I can call it that, is the CF agent. Mm-hmm. That's the bit that make all changes. Mm-hmm. And then there are a bunch of services around that. So there's a server daemon, which is for file transfer. Mm-hmm. There is a exec daemon, the executor, which is, if you like, a replacement for cron. Mm-hmm. I wrote that originally because Windows didn't have a cron. Mm. And, you know, we run on Windows as well. And nowadays, a lot of people just use that instead of cron, because actually there's no reason to have cron at all. If you've got, if you're running CF Engine with this, you can schedule any job through CF Engine. And then there's a monitor daemon, which also runs in the background. And this is the value of being written in C. It's a really lightweight monitoring agent, which you barely notice running in the background, which still can collect all kinds of useful data about the running of the system, mm-hmm. which you can then aggregate it in some way as well and create cool statistics for your system's reports.
So I could use CF Engine to make sure that my cron daemon's running.
You could do that. So there are different ways of doing it. These days, you know, if you're going to run cron at all, I would say you should only run one job on all of your cron files, which is like CF Engine, run CF Engine every 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then CF Engine, you schedule different jobs at different times in your single centrally managed single point of configuration policy by saying on this machine or on this class of machines, I want these jobs to run at these times. Mm-hmm. So it's fully within the expressive power of CF Engine to be able to do pretty sophisticated job scheduling, you know, even on a distributed basis.
Well, I'm thinking it's the example of suppose, you know, I'm root on my box, but suppose I also have a couple of guest users on my box that are maybe maintaining web pages for me. they might want cron jobs because that's all they can access is, you know, the cron tab dash e command. So you might still be running cron for that reason.
Sure. Yep.
Because is there a way to have user plugin CF engine files that get run as that user so you could extend it in that direction?
Actually, any user could run CF engine by themselves, or you could, I guess, create little plugins that CF engine would look for and integrate into its config, but that I probably wouldn't recommend.
Sounds dangerous.
Arbitrary uses the power of root.
Yeah, that's a little tough to control. Once that horse has left the barn, it's a little, you're down the wire there. Okay, so now I'm talking about a system now where I'm actually managing one system, but the real play for CF Engine is when I have more than one system to manage, and especially diverse systems. Can you tell me how CF Engine helps me with that?
Yeah, again, because each machine, actually maybe I didn't say this earlier, but the way CF Engine works is that there's an agent running on each machine. Mm-hmm. And that means that each machine in your network is an autonomous agent. It's mm-hmm. responsible for its own state, so state of health, if you want to call it that. It looks at this policy that it has, which could come from a central location, or it could come from the local machine, or wherever it comes from. It looks at this configuration and says, does my state compare to what I read out of this set of promises? Mm-hmm. And in this set of promises, you describe not only what it is you're promising, but also where and when do these promises apply, under what circumstances. And so you can attach quite sophisticated conditions to whether or not a promise should be kept on a particular system. So it's no problem to create promises that apply only to AIX or Solaris or Linux or FreeBSD mm-hmm. at certain times of day, week, or you can say things like, I want you to check this promise once every 4 hours. I don't really care when, but don't do it more often than every 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And so pretty much the flexibility in the language is there to constrain the way in which CF Engine performs maintenance on your system. Mm-hmm. So it's looking at the promises that it has to keep at each moment in time, every time it wakes up, and it's up to that individual agent to, with the power of root that it has on that system, to set the system to that desired state.
And so these individual agents running on the individual machines can look at a common set of recipes, but pick out of that what particular promises need to be delivered on this machine or this class of machine.
That's exactly what happens. So it calculates, if you like, which of these things should be relevant in the here and now.
So I can describe, let's say I had a kind of a 2 or 3 layer setup, and I'm hosting a website that has a database back end. So I might have a load balancer in front. I might have 2 or 3 web server machines, and then maybe 2 database machines with failover. So I could describe each cluster of layers as a class. And when the machine wakes up with this common recipe, it says, oh, I am the web server. So I need to start web services, and I need to talk to my backend machines, which are over here, and I need to pay attention to the load balancer in front. But so I can describe like subclasses, not just by category of machine, but also by my particular categories, right?
Yeah, you got it.
Cool. All right. Well,
exactly,
I understand
how it works.
Well, you know, it's funny because I built these tools ad hoc in Perl when I was working, again, for, you know, the companies over the years. So it's kind of interesting that CF Engine sort of automates a lot of this then.
It does, and it tries to add a level of standardization. You mentioned the term pattern earlier on, and mm-hmm. what I say when I describe CF Engine 3 now is that we simplified everything in CF Engine got simplified down to just 2 concepts. Mm-hmm. One is the ability to keep a promise, and 2 is the ability to describe a pattern. Because mm-hmm. any kind of configuration is essentially a pattern in either it's a distributed pattern or a local pattern, a pattern in files, a pattern in processes, in time. Mm-hmm. Whatever space you're describing in it is just a pattern. And when you separate that knowledge of these patterns and promises from the actual implementation, which is performed by the agent, the automation, all you're really left with to manage is this knowledge. Yeah. So if you like, what CF Engine 3, the focus we've had in creating CF Engine 3 is on knowledge management, which in my view is that, you know, the next generation of configuration management is about knowledge management. It's about understanding these patterns that you're managing and working with the intentions behind them, not the details, not the recipes. Because the rest, you know, you start out with a recipe. If you open a cookbook, right, every recipe is like flour, eggs, butter, water, mix them up and something comes out. If you don't know what your intention was, if it was a cake or a loaf of bread or whatever, you may end up with something quite different. And when this charred black mass comes out of your oven, you're not quite sure what it was supposed to be, so you may be happy with that. Mm-hmm. But in a server situation, a mission critical situation, you have to absolutely have this cake, and it has to look really good. Mm-hmm. Then you need to know, you need to be working with the intentions and not the recipes, not the specifics of the implementation.
So, going back to my example of my multi-tier service systems, I might have at the web server layer two Linux boxes and one BSD box. And the notion of how to start the web server might be different on each of those, but I'd still have the same goal. If you're a web server, you need to start these things and have these CF files for the web service. So I could have different recipes providing the same goal, keyed by the class, my class of machines, but somehow distinguished at the next level down by whether it's Linux or BSD then, right?
That's right. So you use these classes to alter slightly your intentions in different contexts. Mm. I speak of context. I use the word context for what, when, where, mm-hmm. including operating system type, basically anything that you can classify about the machine. You can set a class based on the existence of a file or a particular version of some software. Or you can probe these different features or different attributes and turn them into classes, which you then put promises inside. And you can also create containers, like we call them bundles of promises. So a bundle of promises might be a set of related things that have to do with this issue, like, say, the mail service or the web service. Mm-hmm. And then within that bundle, you may have, this is specific for FreeBSD, this is generic for everybody, this is, you know, specific for one machine. Hmm. So really, you can drill down to either a single machine at a point in time and space, or you can say the entire universe should be configured according to this pattern. Wow. And that's good because, you know, my dream is to have CF Engine in outer space, running on space technology on the far frontiers of civilization.
There you go. That's dreaming bigger than almost anybody else I've talked to here on the show. So that's really good. I don't think anybody's mentioned that before. That's great. So, again, practical speaking, CF Engine's being used by names I would recognize. Is it being used in a lot of places?
I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say all the names, but...
I saw a list somewhere on your website. We could probably read those.
We estimate that CF Engine is running on several million machines, uh-huh. 5,000 different companies.
Wow.
Pretty much everywhere. If you look, if you turn stones in the organizations, you find CF Engine pretty much everywhere. And a lot of big name, Fortune 500, 100 companies, mm-hmm. all the banks, the military, the oil companies, pretty much anywhere running HPC, high performance computing. CF Engine is everywhere in these systems. It's incredible. I'm humbled by the way people have taken it. I remember, it was back in 1997, I think, the very first time I came to the U.S. to talk about CF Engine. I wrote the thing in 93, mm-hmm. came to the U.S. in 97, and I walked through the door, and somebody saw my name badge, and he said, "Oh, you're Mark Burgess. You wrote CF Engine."
Wow.
And at that time, I didn't even have any clue that anybody else was using it. Incredible.
So how about support? Now, I know you've got there's a community level of support, the traditional open source model where there's mailing lists, I presume, and web chats and forums and things like that. But you also have some specialization that you're building a company around supporting CF Engine. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's my project. In fact, I'm on leave from the university now for the purpose of building up this CF Engine company. Mm-hmm. And the idea was that, for 17 years, CF Engine has just been in the open community with mailing lists helping people out. But I've been doing essentially all of the coding. The way the community has worked in CF Engine is, people have been great at testing, coming up with ideas, but they haven't produced code. So I've done the coding, and that's worked fine. They've come with the ideas, and everybody's been pretty happy.
Let me ask for a second, though. Is that because they didn't want to give you code, or the code they were giving just didn't fit your goals, or nobody wanted to give any code?
They just didn't send any.
Wow.
I did get a couple. I mean, the one thing that I remember getting was, in fact, from Red Hat, which was the beginning when packages started coming out, new uh-huh. package managers, and Red Hat wrote a little module for RPMs, uh-huh. which ended up in CF Engine 2. Actually, rewrote that later, and then somebody from Trondheim University here in Norway wrote a similar thing for the Debian package. So there were times when people sent little bits of code here and there, but on the whole, the main sort of architectural part of CF Engine pretty much came from me
wow.
personally.
Wow.
And at some point, you know, I mean, it's great. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's incredibly fulfilling to write code that you know people are using in mission-critical situations. Mm-hmm. It's a great feeling, but I realize that, you know, I'm getting old and I'm not going to be able to do this for the rest of my life.
Okay.
I need my exit strategy, so I need to build up something to support this for those mission-critical environments. Mm-hmm. And the community just wasn't really providing that level of support. So I thought, build up a company. If we can actually make a commercial case for it, then we can support the product through, you know, paying smart people to develop it further so that people who really rely on CF Engine from day to day for mission critical stuff, I mean, you know, banks, the military, major service organizations really have this hooked into CF Engine. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. I really want to do my best for them in the future, and that I believe the way that it's going to work for CF Engine is to build up this company around the open source software.
So you're following are you following the typical model of there being sort of a base level that's always going to remain open source and then having some sort of value added features on top of it there, or are you just going to add services on top of that?
The services, of course, services are great. We want to be a software company because the our interest is in the core technology. Mm-hmm. And I think if we start creating the core technology and a business case around that, other people will come and provide those services.
Okay.
So the core expertise, I think, is going to be in bringing the software forward. And we've, of course, definitely got this solid core of CF Engine, which is the open source part, which is going to remain open source for forever and a day. Mm-hmm. And then the commercial bit is interesting. It's interesting because we spent so long trying to find a really interesting model which is worthy of open source mm-hmm. to be able to make money on. And we came up with this idea of a commercial license where you basically get all of the rights of the GNU public license as long as you pay.
Mm.
So you can do pretty much anything that you would have done with the GPL as long as you pay us a license fee. And we were so pleased with ourselves for having come up with this great way of maintaining user freedoms and giving people the insight that they need. And nobody was even the slightest bit interested in this whatsoever.
Yeah, right.
They were either interested in the open source one, or they just wanted to pay for the commercial version and be done with it. Couldn't care less about the source code.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've ended up with is this separation between the commercial version, which does have some extra features, you know, some sort of things that make business processes simpler and make certain things easier, integration with other things, extra reporting, kind of things that enterprise level people want to do. But we haven't taken any of the core technology out of the open source bit. So if people want to roll their own and add their own scripts around CF Engine, they can still use the power of the technology. And, you know, of course, some people will never pay for software, and some people really want to pay for software for business reasons.
Right.
We're hoping that that balance will, you know, take CF Engine forward into the future and give it a long and successful career, even after I'm, walking with a Zimmer frame.
Well, you know, the model works for companies like Red Hat. You know, if you build a good enough product, people will pay you for, you know, just to have it, because they can check off a box that says, yes, this is actually commercial software, rather than just being something I downloaded, you know, which everybody seems to be afraid of for some reason. So not so much anymore, but it definitely was the case for a while. So, well, I wish you the best of luck in all this. Is there, are you looking still for then people to contribute to the core, or is this really just you and your new company doing that?
Well, I imagine it'll continue in the way that it's always continued. I have no really good explanation for why I haven't contributed before. Maybe it's, you know, my terrible disposition.
Well, you've been pleasant in this call, so I can't imagine you being unpleasant.
You have Tim Fates on the other side of the line. Well, wow. I hope it's not that. But that's the way it's worked out. You know, maybe it has to do with... let me tell you, the one reason people who like CF Engine like it, they mm-hmm. say they like the fact that it's based on science, on a model,
mm-hmm.
which to me is very gratifying, because that's, you know, I am a would-be scientist, and that part of it is very, very important to me. That's part of the currency of this for me, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
So certain people are going to look at it as a very scientific project. I know, you know, the puppet guys often try to use that, saying, oh, CF Engine is very academic. But some people actually like that about CF Engine, and maybe that's what makes people reticent in contributing to the code. Maybe they think, you know, we are the custodians of the science, and they contribute with the bug tracking or testing or whatever. I don't care. It suits me fine. I think the collaboration has worked just great over the years. I'm very happy, and I think we have great users who do a fantastic job in helping to develop the technology.
Cool. Very cool. Well, I really appreciate you taking your time out to chat with our audience today, and wish you the best of luck in your future endeavors. And I'm going to be looking more detailed out at CF Engine and see how it could help me on the machines that I've got going on. Oh, I just had one extra question here. I jotted down some notes while we were chatting. If I have a rule that says that Apache's always running and something comes by and checks every 10 minutes, I've written scripts like that before. And I run into a problem where there's that script running in the background somewhere, and then I've got to do some maintenance. I've got to, like, you know, bounce the server a couple times or change my CF files or whatever. Is there an easy way to say, don't run this promise for a little bit because I'm doing maintenance, or do I actually have to go back into the CF files and change them all?
Yeah, there are all kinds of different ways you could do that. That's a whole different program, Randall.
Tech support. I'm asking for tech support already, and I haven't even started using this. Well, okay. I'll see you on the mailing list. I'll see you in the chat rooms. It'll be fine. I'll get my answer that way. I'll take my answer off the air, as they like to say. So, again, I just want to thank you. Mark Burgess has been with us to talk about CF Engine. Thank you very much, Mark.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.
Well, there you have it. Great little conversation with Mark Burgess, CF Engine. It's interesting, too, because I was thinking back to the show we did on Puppet, and Puppet seems a little more immediate to me, that I can kind of read the rules and sort of figure them out right away. But, you know, as I was prepping for this show and I looked over the CF Engine version 3 stuff, it did sort of, the regularity of it did sort of make sense. But you can definitely tell that CF Engine was designed by someone that was more academic and perhaps a little less practical. Maybe that's a good parallel for that, I think, would be comparing Perl, which is sort of designed by trench people, people in the streets, compared to, say, Haskell or Scheme, which seems to be much more designed by academics. So, you know, whatever your bent is, I'm sure both of them will work. I'm going to look a lot more at CF Engine because I know that a lot of really large organizations are using it. So glad to have them on. That was a lot of fun. We do have a bunch of really great guests coming up. If you go to twit.tv/floss, there's a spreadsheet listed from there that gives you all the upcoming shows. Next week we have Matthew Gates. Bill Gates' brother? No, I don't know. Matthew Gates, who wrote the Great Stellarium program. That's a planetarium program, so you can see where the stars are and the planets and things like that. We're then talking to, after that, Henrique Bastos, who's going to talk to us about open source in Rio de Janeiro and also talk to us about the Python convention, PyCon. After that, we've got Sebastian Branstam going to be talking to us about the Symbian open source operating system, the one that runs on, and I got this wrong last time, oh, Nokia, that runs on the Nokia machines. Then Webmin, which is a configuration system, remote configuration system. Jamie Cameron's coming on for that. A bunch of other people on the short list. Again, if there's somebody you want to hear that isn't on that list or is too low on the list because they don't have contact information for them, please contact them, have them contact me, and they'll go right to the top of the list. And be a little patient. I just counted yesterday. I have 175 pieces of email to process for Floss Weekly. I'm falling a little bit behind because I've been working pretty heavily. Speaking of working, I'm still looking for work. If you contact me at merlin@stonehenge.com, if you're looking for a good Perl hacker or a good sysadmin or a good toolsmith or even some small talk work, I am available for all that, even some technical writing perhaps. Whatever sort of works, I definitely will be running out of money shortly unless somebody comes up and steps up to the plate. Please contact me at will. You can also follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N. If you had been following me on Twitter last night, you would have seen me do a live karaoke stream. We had a really fun time for 4 hours at Pisano's last night. Sang some good songs, had some interesting chats in the chat room from that. Had people all the way from Australia and the East Coast on this particular shot. But feel free to follow me there. And when we come back next week, we will have, as usual, Leo Laporte will be joining me for chatting with Matthew Gates of Stellarium. So thank you all. We'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.